There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1004, August 7th, 2023. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say, drivers are enjoying their summer break in shorts. Indy cars racing on bridge over troubled waters. Penske and Porsche win in Wisconsin. We shall explain, gladly. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Toto falls off his bicycle. Leclerc signs a new contract with Ferrari. So many rumors about Sainz, about Hulkenberg, about LCH, about Fernando. What does it all mean? And this week's special interview from the archives, the dusty cobwebs of history, it's Nick Heidfeld. You're going to love it. It's awesome. And I just want to remind everybody, we need your contributions to keep this program alive, to keep it on the cloud. So please, just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know, you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. I hope you're enjoying your summer break biking in the hills of Austria.
Yes, sir. I am having a great time. I am hanging out these days in beautiful Frederick, MD, and in 2 weeks, I'll be flying to Calais to see the charming face of the host of F1 Weekly. So it's all positive. How are things on the left coast?
Absolutely outstanding. We are having a bit of a heat wave, but that should go away in a couple of days. And it's going to be fun. I also have my younger brother flying out to help me with some, well, we need a little maintenance here at the facilities. So the Palatial Studios will be getting a paint job, maybe some new baseboards, and maybe a little plumbing. We'll see what happens, but got some big projects. And of course, we've got Laguna Seca coming up in a couple of weeks. And there's so much activity. There are so many cars to see. I mean, the auction houses are full of used Ferraris. At half price, Nasser.
Wow, how many are you picking up?
A couple on the shopping list. Of course, one of our favorite four cam babies with the 365, lots of history. There will be one of those for sale. Just bring your checkbook, Nas, and we'll get you fixed up.
Wow, yeah, that is a beautiful vehicle. Okay, sir, moving on with the show, we shall start with what makes the world go round? Money, money, money. Must be funny in F1's world. You probably saw this press release. Liberty Media released their second quarter results. And their stock, if anybody is interested, is listed on NASDAQ under the symbol FWONK. So it's F1K. Their revenue for 3 months was $724 million, a decrease of 3% from same period last year when the revenue was $744 million. The difference of $20 million was washed away by the flooding in Imola. And my heart goes out to Chase Carey and John Malone and all the big executives at Liberty Media for the loss of revenue. Now, payment to teams was $344 million, which is over $1 million per month, compared to $368 million same period last year. Toto and company are being paid $344 million for a three-month period. And you know the top teams get the most money, and they are still bitching and moaning about Michael Andretti, Cadillac entry will dilute their earnings. I say there is a lot of hogwash from the hills of El Dorado. The bottom line moved up the grid, which is good news. Operating income improved in Q2 from $49 million to $52 million. And Mr. Rogers, as they say on Wall Street, greed only grows and fear goes. What say you on these money matters?
Well, it's all about the dollar. Cash is king, as Lewis Hamilton once stated. But no, and the Vegas thing is now going through the roof in terms of costs, production, paving the streets. The people are pissed in Vegas. I'm not sure what's going to happen, but I hope they make half of their money back because they could be a losing proposition. But these things happen on first-time Grand Prix.
Oh, by the way, speaking of Grand Prix in the United States, the Texas Grand Prix in October, I saw a news item and somebody also brought it to my attention. They are selling a general admission three-day package at Costco for $349.
And don't forget, that comes with a free hot dog.
Yes, and that is just free admission. And the article that I was reading also mentioned this does not include $250 parking. But parking you can get there. There are lots of all these ranches there, and they all provide free courtesy shuttle to the place. But man, last year it took me 4 hours to get out of the track. It was just an unbelievable traffic jam. So I'm not sure if I will go this year because at this stage I cannot wait 4 hours for anything, let alone trying to get back to my motel.
I concur. At our age, waiting is not an option.
Si, senor. But it's a very great track. I've always enjoyed going there. I've been to every Grand Prix there except for the first one. And I'm so glad I missed the first one because on that day I was in Vegas talking to young whippersnappers like Max, Lance, George Russell, Charles Leclerc. So there's a price you have to pay for everything.
Indeed.
Or as Mr. Don Henley would say, every form of refuge has its price. But that's another story. Okay, sir, now we come to they shoot horses, don't they? Based on rumor mill, and looks like it may be confirmed by the time this is published, looking more and more likely Charles Leclerc will extend his contract with Ferrari, which is set to expire at the end of next season. He is in the same position now as Fernando Alonso and Sebastian Vettel at Ferrari. Nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. He's really having a hard time hiding on the top step of the podium, which I don't think will be changing anytime soon. Now, regarding his teammate, Ralf Schumacher, you know, he has an opinion on everything, just like Mark Webber. He told Sky Deutschland, and I quote, "I have the feeling that Carlos Sainz Jr. has lost confidence in the team. There are rumors that his father is in the paddock looking for alternatives." End quote. Now, one of these options could be the company his Papito drove for in rallying or Dakar, Audi. Another German driver, Christian Danner, thinks Ferrari has slipped into permanent mediocrity, which is pretty sad to hear. He said, and I quote, "Ferrari has said goodbye to its status among the Olympus of Formula One teams. They have no plan. They're stuck in the midfield now." End quote. Sir, do you agree with Mr. Christian Danner? They are no longer the Olympus, but they have now become maybe like cheap Kodak camera.
I understand what he's trying to say, but I completely disagree. Ferrari is a special team. They deserve special respect for being here since the beginning. And not only that, I mean, they will come back. It takes time. They are Italian, folks. I mean, you gotta cut them some slack.
The train may run on time, but they don't get to the winning platform on time, unfortunately. But it's a magical name, like you said. Everybody wants to see them succeed. Yeah, they do disappear from top-level Formula One competition for years and years. and then they finally reach the winning platform. So we'll see how that goes. But talking of winning and top step of the platform, there is, you know, silence all quiet on the eastern, western, northern, southern fronts in Formula One. Any possibility any other team might win a race this season, or what is remaining of it?
Not a chance, unless something weird happens. Attendance at the DNF Chapel has been overwhelming. Everybody's going, and I'm telling you, this Verstappen guy has got this all buttoned up for a couple more years, and that's just the way it is. I mean, we're only halfway through the season. Look how many points this guy's got. It's unbelievable. So it's going to be tough on a number of people. Once again, timing. When you become a dominant team and you're not on that dominant team, you hope that that dominator doesn't do it for too long, sort of like LCH from 14 to 2021. But really, I feel bad for Leclerc, I feel bad for Perez, but that's the way it is. There's only one dominator every, 10 years? And we've got one, so you just got to relax. Ask Fernando. He's got a chip, but it's whittled down a little bit.
He's got a chip and a chair. He's a lucky guy.
Exactly.
Okay, sir, moving on. Safnauer may be snapped by another team. Otmar Safnauer, man from Detroit who came into Formula One through Ford's ownership of Jaguar, is confident that he can claw back into the Formula One paddock after receiving from Alpine a Ray Charles CD featuring
Hit the Road Jack, and don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the Road Jack, and don't you come back no more.
Safnauer joined Alpine at the start of the 2022 season, which was last year. Not sure how much control he had over what happened with their two drivers who flew the hornet's nest. The old man of the Saragossa Sea, Fernando Alonso, and the young whippersnapper from Land Down Under. Mr. Piastri did put on an Oscar-winning performance on Twitter, if not on Broadway. Otmar has a good sense of humor. Talking about not given enough time to make things happen at Alpine, he said, and I quote, "I always say you can't get 9 women pregnant and hope you have a baby in a month," end quote. I think Alpine will be in painful labor for a while. Best option, in my humble opinion, for them is to have a cesarean delivery through Dr. Michael Andretti, bring home the F1 baby in a pink Cadillac. And you remember Mr. Rogers Sebastian Vettel used to name his cars?
I do.
Mikey can name his first car Aretha and get some R-E-S-P-E-C-T from Toto and Christian. And you, Monsieur Roger, are Francais. Alpine is Francais. How are you feeling about what's going on at Enstone and Viry-Châtillon?
It is a little bizarre. I mean, I'm a big Renault fan. And when I hear things like Alpine is going to be our Ferrari in France. I mean, Alpine has been around for a long, long time. Nobody replaces Ferrari anywhere. That's really a bad marketing strategy. So I'm disappointed because I like Alpine. The electric cars are not going to be as exciting, but that's what they're going to sell here. They'll sell some, not a big deal. But I think they've lost complete focus. And when you lose somebody like Primon, who's been around for so long, you know, something is wrong, and hopefully Renault will fix it, or get out of F1, or sell it to Andretti. Who knows what's going to happen?
You know, I was reading that they are trying to promote this Alpine brand, which has a glorious history, but I read that last year they sold less than 4,000 cars globally, and if they're going to try to break in the U.S. market, 4,000 is a very small number just in the U.S. market. And the way the U.S. market is, it's very hard to topple BMW. For people who buy cars, performance cars for the bling factor, it's very hard to topple BMW, Audi. They have such a strong foundation here and a cult following. So I just don't see how you can spend whatever it is now, $180 million or $200 million to promote a brand that is selling less than 4,000 cars. And it's, I mean, these cars are not priced in the same league as the Bugatti Veyron. Am I correct, Senor?
You're absolutely correct. Between 60 and 80,000, depending on the package. But not only that, Alpine only has one or two models. They're not big cars. If you go look at Americans, they want, and this is why everybody bows to the Americans and builds these huge cars. You know, Camrys started out as a small car. It's not a small car anymore. It's huge. Why? The American ass. It's huge, ladies and gentlemen. And that's why you have Buicks, you have Camrys, you have BMW 7 Series. They're massive. The Alpine will sell. Bob, who joined the Renault Club in 1977, he's going to buy an Alpine. Frederick, who's a Francophile and meets at the Francophile and Gauloise meet in Los Gatos, he'll probably buy one. But, you know, it's not going to be a big seller. I don't understand any of this strategy. I think they're smoking cigarettes over there, and it has to change.
You know, the only thing I can see for them is if they bring, and again, first thing they're going to have is nobody knows Alpine here, okay? And not many people are going to care if they bring it under Renault brand. But I think one thing they can do, they have some nice models in the Nissan, you know, the Nissan GTR, the Nissan Skyline was so popular. It was, I don't think it was ever imported here, but they can get some nice sporty models from the Nissan side, put the Alpine brand and sell it here. But it's just a very competitive market, and I just don't see them really trying to get something going. I mean, you look at Mazda came with the RX-7. It was a huge hit. A couple of models worked out, but now it's gone.
I think they're working on the Goshen Limited Edition.
Oh, that would be very good. Oh, yeah. And with every purchase, you get a big musical box as a gift?
Exactly. You get an empty piano box in case you need to, you know, sneak out of the country.
Yes, exactly. Very good. Okay, sir, next we move on to be or not to be on pole position. While Max seems to win from 6th or 16th or anywhere on the grid, the man who led the world championship after the first three races of the 2022 season, that would be Charles Leclerc, seems to be having an issue winning when starting from pole position. He has not won a race from his last 9 pole positions. I guess it's slippery when spaghetti. And I really feel bad for him. Just like you said earlier, this is a very, very special talent. Tremendous junior formula record. 1 GP3 first time out. Formula 2 first time out. And now he's stuck in a car that's not competitive. Who knows when they will get this mojo going. But at least, just like Jacques Villeneuve at Bar Honda, or whatever they were called, he is... I'm sure he gets a red carpet treatment when he enters his Geneva Bank branch. What say you?
I agree. The toaster is always in the mail. But yes, I mean, Leclerc, like I said, Max has got this. He got it. He's young. 2026 will come. And 2026 could be a bomb for Red Bull. And all of a sudden, it could be Ferrari winning everything, dominating. So this is what you have to hope for. You hope for the planets aligning, the Jesus arriving, and of course, Guido Sarducci being on your side. So it could happen. Look at Max. It happened to him, and he's riding the wave. But you know, Max, if things go wrong and he's got a crappy car in 2026, it could be bye-bye, Max, and he'll go off doing Le Mans with Papa.
Yeah, he has a very open mind, that's for sure. Okay, sir, we all know we don't need to talk about who's going to win the championship this season. Looking ahead, who among the current crop you think may not be with the same team or may not be in Formula One? Let's start with your favorite driver. You always pounce on him, Logan Sargeant.
Logan Sargeant, I think he'll be there. I think they are doing so much work behind the scenes that their two drivers are fine. They've got plenty of work to do. And they have their number one dude, Albon, who's really performing well. And if they don't pick it up, they could lose Albon. But Williams has made progress, and that's good for everybody in Formula One.
Yeah, they got this guy from Mercedes, James Vowles, and they are also bringing in very experienced Pat Fry, who worked at Ferrari, McLaren, and so hopefully things will turn around. But we've said this a few times, but I agree with you that I think they will keep Logan Sargeant, and they have to keep the same people and move up with the same drivers. You don't want changes every season. Okay, next is the real hot item, habanero item of the day. Checo Perez, Sergio Perez, will he be in Red Bull next season? What say you?
I think he will be, but there's so many rumors. I don't see Daniel Ricciardo going to Red Bull and being a number two, because that's why he quit Red Bull in the first place. Max Verstappen is still not going to be catchable. I don't care how good Ricciardo is. Folks, Max is on another level. And not only that, but Perez could turn out to be a better match for the Red Bull than Danny. But on the other hand, there's rumors that the RB19 is going to be at AlphaTauri. That could be called something completely different. If they get the RB19, then they might have, a competitive package. So who knows what's going on? I don't trust any of these rumors. I mean, they saw Hülkenberg buying a Coke in the Red Bull paddock, and all of a sudden, boy, there's rumors flying.
Yes, and you talked about the sponsor. I also heard that they will use the RB19, AlphaTauri, that is. So that means they will have a car faster than Ferrari next year. The big rumor is that this German company, clothing company, Hugo Boss, a longtime sponsor at McLaren and Mika Hakkinen, the team will become Hugo Boss Bulls or something like that. And this is a very, very strong rumor, and it's coming from Germany, from very well-established publication. So I will not be surprised if that happened, because see what happened. AlphaTauri is a fashion brand, and they are like maybe the Alpine of fashion world, not very big, just big in Austria. And probably they gave the idea to people at Hugo Boss, hey, we can call this car Boss Bulls, and they probably sell a lot more than AlphaTauri, so let's see what's happening. My take on Sergio Perez is this. He has backing from Telmex, company owned by Carlos Slim. So he will be in Formula One. Whether he'll be in Red Bull or go to Sauber, Alfa Romeo, Audi, whatever they are called next year. But I'm pretty sure he will be in Formula One. The Red Bull seat, I think, will be dependent. If in the remaining races, Ricciardo is as competitive as Tsunoda, then Ricciardo is not coming into the Red Bull team again. But if he blows away Tsunoda, who is fast but erratic, then there is some hope. And I'm going to tell you something. If Liam Lawson wins the championship in Japan, then they may put him in one of the AlphaTauri cars, or maybe give him a shot at Red Bull. But if he does not win the Super Formula Championship, because he's done 2 years in Formula 2, and this is his third attempt at a major series. And if he cannot win the championship, then his teriyaki dishes will be totally done. So it will be interesting to see who will be Max's teammate. But as long as they have Honda engines and Adrian Newey, nobody's going to beat this guy unless they put Fernando Alonso or Lewis Hamilton in that car. And you and I both know that's not happening. So more power to Max. And I am looking forward to him being 5-time world champions with 70 plus. If you think about that, by the end of the season, he's going to have more wins than Alain Prost. And he's 25. That is serious, whatever you want to call it. Good news, bad news for some, but it's an incredible achievement.
It is. It's unbelievable. We have big schedules compared to what they had in the 70s. But I also like the Hugo Boss angle. I mean, that's a great company, very German. They have a history of making military uniforms. I think it's wonderful.
Well, every German company, whether it's Mercedes, BMW, ThyssenKrupp, a fashion brand, their past catches up. It's sad, but as they say in German, traurig, aber wahr, sad but true.
Yeah, but the Hugo Boss uniforms, They did look good, even in the 30s and 40s. You gotta give it to Hugo. He's a great designer.
Well, you being a Francais and you saying that they look good, I'm kind of surprised, but I'll take your word for it.
Well, let me put it this way. Do you know why the roads in France are lined with trees?
Tell me.
To give the Germans shade.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. That's a good one.
Gracias.
Okay, sir. So, shall we take a quick break here, or what shall we do now?
I do. Since I've done a German joke, I need to take a French break. So we'll be back after this brief message. Okay, now here's the interview from the archives. Nick Heidfeld, would you like to add something, Nasser?
Yes, sir. I would like to thank him again after all these years. And this conversation took place at Sebring. And I just walked up to him. He was sitting with some other drivers. He was very nice, polite. And, you know, what is interesting in this interview, when I asked him about him being at Sabor and Kimi coming and what happened between him and Ron Dennis and Norbert Hawk. So hopefully our listeners will enjoy this conversation. And our podcast is now also available on Downforce Radio in England. So hopefully people will enjoy there also. Thank you.
Okay, folks, I'm here at Sebring with Nick Heidfeld from Mönchengladbach. Nick, nice to meet you. How is the weekend going for you?
It's 2.5 hours to go, and unfortunately we had too many problems. We are many, many laps down. As you can see here, not the listeners, but we all three drivers are here, so there's nobody driving out there. We might get out in the end for the last 1.5 hours or so and just check if the car's okay.
How do you find the circuit? It's an old airport. Is it very bumpy?
I love it. I've been here before, and yes, it is bumpy, but it's drivable. There are other circuits in Europe, Portimao, for example. There are not many bumps, but there's one or two bumps. When you go over them, you think your back will break. Here is obviously bumpy, but it's part of the circuit. It makes the circuit, and it's very enjoyable.
Now, you've raced here in Formula One also. How do you find the American racing scene compared to Europe?
I love it here. This is why I'm here. After F1, I didn't imagine that it would be so cool to drive here. But after our joint rebellion, we did a few years here. We've been to Laguna Seca, to Sebring, Petit Le Mans. And in the back of my mind, I was always looking forward and hoping to come back. And then for this year, Rebellion decided to do WEC and some races here in the US. And I was all in to do the races over here. And luckily, I had the chance to come over and do not many, but a couple of races.
Now, talking of Laguna Seca, how thrilling is going through the corkscrew?
I've been there once and it was amazing. But what I found even nicer is that the circuit as a whole is fantastic. Everybody speaks about corkscrew. It's a special corner or a special complex. But all the rest of the circuit is amazing as well. A lot of up and down. It's got a very nice flow, and it was one of the coolest races I've ever done.
And have you had some time to travel in California?
No, not yet. Maybe this summer I will go with the family, come to the U.S. and spend a bit more time, and maybe then I have some time.
Okay, now, last 20 years have been very good for German motorsports. What got you interested in racing? Was there interest in the family?
Yes, my father was into motorsport. He did a bit of go-karts himself, but just as a hobby, and he liked motorcycle driving, yeah, so he likes motorsport, and this is how I got into it. Actually, when I was 4.5 years, my two brothers, I'm the middle one, got a little motorbike as a Christmas present, and this is how the motorsport stuff started. I had two accidents in motocross, and then my mother said this is too dangerous, and then we had a little break and then started karting when I was 8.5.
Now, you won championships in Formula Ford, Formula 3, and Formula 3000. Which series played the most important part in improving you as a racing driver?
I think Formula 3. Formula 3 nowadays, but also back then, is already very, very professional. From the drivers, from the teams, from how you have to perform to succeed, from the level of engineering. And yeah, I think if you make it in Formula 3, if you're very successful there as a young kid, you dream that you can make your hobby into your job. it is still, is this the thing most of us love most? And if you can do this as your job, earn money and do what you love most, that's fantastic. And this is what I thought about Formula 3. If you make it there, you have a chance.
Okay. Now, in Formula 3000, you race against Montoya, and Raikkonen was your teammate in Formula 1. You've raced against both of these people. Between the two, who had the most talent?
Difficult to say, because Montoya was not my teammate, so I cannot say. I think most people would say naturally that Montoya is more gifted, but I'm not sure. He definitely is. He goes in a car. He has very good car control, but both of them are amazing drivers. And even though the season where I fought with Montoya for the Formula 3000 Championship, we had a lot of close fights and didn't really get on very well. But this, for me, is the season I enjoy most in my motorsport career, because it was such a tense fight, and it was great.
And how would you rate Raikkonen as a race pure natural talent against Montoya?
I don't want to do that, because I didn't drive with both of them in the same team. What I can say about Kimi, because he was my teammate in Sauber, that he impressed me, especially with his race pace. From the beginning on, he was very strong in races, and he still is nowadays. He doesn't make many mistakes. He's very consistent and very efficient and good.
Did he talk a little bit to you?
Yes, of course. We got on very, very well. It was we had a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, he hardly says anything. Anyway, in Formula One, Alain Prost was your first team boss. What was your experience with him, both on personal and professional basis?
I think it was very difficult for him, because the team struggled massively. I think in this year, the first year where I joined the team and Formula One, we had even less points than Minardi, who back then always struggled the most, unfortunately. And I think it was very difficult for Alain to change things around, and you could feel it in his mood. It put pressure on him, and I think even nowadays when I see him, he looks very fit, and he is very fit, and he needs this to level out. I think if he doesn't do sport, he can go quite crazy. I respect him massively for what he's done in Formula One, and yeah, he's a very special person.
Okay. Jean Alesi has been your teammate. Was he the most emotional teammate you ever had?
For me, he was the one that was most different in the car and outside the car. He was a very nice guy, but I remember very well once in Ost, where we had a race together, where actually he was instructed not to overtake me, because he still had to do one stop, and I already stopped, and we had a good chance to maybe score some points, and he tried to overtake me, and we both crashed out, which from my perspective was clearly his mistake, and he made a big mess and fuss about it. And then to the contrary, in France, when we had a race in Manicourt, I fucked up and I crashed into him, and it was my mistake. And it was his home race and in Manicourt, and he could have like killed me, you know, in the French press. And he was very nice. He said, yeah, it can happen. And yeah, he's a very, very special character. Outside of the car, he's very nice. If he puts a visor down, he becomes a proper racing driver.
Yeah. Okay, now during the 2001 season, you scored more points than Kimi, but McLaren Mercedes took him for the 2002 season. Did you ask Norbert Hogg reason for their decision? Because many people were expecting you to get the seat, and I believe you were part of the Mercedes driver development program.
Yes, I spoke to Norbert before, and he assured me that things are looking good and I should just keep doing my job, and I did, and then they took him, and to be honest, I didn't really speak a lot about it. It was done, it was over, and I would have loved to go there, but on the other side, Kimi deserves it as well, and he's become world champion afterwards. He's a fantastic driver, so I'm happy for him, but of course I would have liked to go there as well.
Now, talking of McLaren, they are having a huge problem with actually more than a huge problem with Honda these days, and there are now talks they may go back to Mercedes. How do you view this situation?
I find it tough to see, because I did a lot of testing in F1 for McLaren, And for me, it's been the best team I've ever worked with. Later on, I was with BMW, who were also fantastic, but back in the late 90s, when they were winning championships with Häkkinen, I was testing there. It was an amazing team, and to see them struggling now is tough. I want them to, even they didn't take me and they took Kimi, I would like to see them win.
Okay, let me get your opinion on Dron Dennis. You know, once upon a time, Kimi said he's a control freak. So I asked one day Martin Brundle, who also drove for McLaren, I asked him if Kimi is correct. He said, no, he's wrong. Ron is ultra, you know, like clean freak. How did you view him in terms of dealing with him?
I have the feeling that he didn't like me enough to put me in the car. But he's the best team boss I've ever had. Of course, he's special, but to be successful in such an environment, there are not many people successful. You need to be special in a certain way. And what I did like is that the team was fantastically organized, but it was not like it was seen from the outside, like everything was sterile and there was no fun. And it was not like that. The organization was perfect, but being with the guys, with the mechanics, with the engineers, we had a lot of fun. It was a fantastic environment.
Now, BMW Sauber's only win came in Canada, and this went to your teammate Robert Kubica. Oh, it could have been yours also. Any thoughts at that time that the team wanted him to get the victory? You're out of racing, so you can say now. Silence is golden.
Yes, don't want to speak about it.
Okay, no problem. I understand. Okay. You have 13 podium finishes in Formula One. That's a matter of great accomplishment. How do you look at it? Is that a source of pride or frustration that victory did not come your way?
Well, you have to be sort of happy with what you achieve, and you have to pinch yourself.
Yeah.
I've achieved a lot compared to other people, and I was very lucky compared to other people, but on the other side, I didn't come into Formula 1 to only finish on the podium 13 times. My target was to win races and the championship. So I enjoyed it massively. I'm happy to have been on the podium many times, but I regret that I didn't win races and the championship, of course.
If I remember correctly, you had a home pole position, right?
Yeah, one. Only pole position came at Nürburgring, yeah.
That had to be a great feeling.
Yeah, it was fantastic feeling, but I was always the guy that, for me, the show and this stuff was not that important. So pole position is nice, but I always worked more for the race.
Now, you're also racing in Formula E. Is the driving technique for Formula E more closer to Formula One or like sports car racing, where you have to manage the car and, you know, endurance race?
I find it more similar to Formula One, or let's call it single-seaters. In sports cars, for me, the car is moving around a lot more, even though Formula E is relatively heavy. But yeah, it's more like Formula One, but it's not the same. We have don't have slicks. We have a lot less power, a lot less downforce, and it's unique. And this is also why I like it a lot. After having had a long career in Formula One and in single seaters, this is completely different. What I like about it is that it's a one-day event. We have practice, quali, race all in one day. Physically, it's not too bad, but mentally, it's a big challenge, but one that is very enjoyable. To work with the team in this short period of time is fantastic. And I think we have a fantastic field of drivers. The level of drivers is very high, which also makes it a lot more enjoyable than if you drive against people that are not really up to speed. Well, for me, they are mainly positives. The circuits, if you ask most drivers in Formula 1, they would probably say Singapore is nice, Monaco, like those street circuits, and probably Suzuka and Spa as well. But we only have street circuits in Formula E. And yeah, it's, on top of that, the icing on the cake is the venues we go to. Like this year, later, we will go to New York, we go to Montreal, we've been to Moscow, Berlin, Paris, Miami, Long Beach, you know, it's incredible.
My favorite is Punta del Este. How is that town?
I liked it a lot. Unfortunately, we don't go there anymore. It was a very challenging circuit. Some of the chicanes were a bit too mad. It was a bit dangerous, but it was a cool place directly at the beach.
You like racing here, coming to the U.S.? Any desire to race in the Indy 500? And you've raced there in Formula One.
No. To be honest, I would be scared. I've never done an oval, and I have a lot of respect for these guys. I think it would be very difficult to say you go there and to perform at a high level. Probably you can go there, but to go there and compete against the guys who've done it for years and years and know how to place a car and go at those high speeds so close to each other and to the walls, at this stage of my career, I wouldn't do it.
Now, you mentioned your brothers. One of your brothers, Sven, runs a racing school. Do you get involved in that also?
Hardly ever. Sometimes he asks me if there's an event and people are interested in me joining. I come once in a while, but no, not often. But he's doing well. He built it by himself and is going strong now.
Now, you're from Mönchengladbach, and I believe Heinz Harald Frentzen is from that town also. Did you guys know each other growing up?
Yes, he's a few years older, so we didn't really race together, but yeah, we knew each other, and especially our fathers knew each other, and yeah. And actually, my younger brother Sven is married to the half sister of Heinz Harald Frentzen.
Oh, wow, very interesting. Now, when you were coming through the system, I know you were in the Mercedes program, Mercedes McLaren. Were you managing your own contracts, or did you have a manager?
No, I did have a manager that helped me.
Okay. Yeah, because Sebastian Vettel likes to say, I don't need a manager, I can get to the track on my own. Realistically, how important is a good manager, especially if you're coming through the system?
I think Seb is doing a fantastic job, and he can do it, but you need to be able to judge yourself well enough. I think for me it was the right step to take a manager. For me, it worked better with a manager than without. Nowadays I do things by myself. So everybody has to judge for himself, and not like also as a racing driver. You cannot say, okay, Senna is my idol, I will be like him. It's not working. You have to look at your strengths, at your weaknesses, and just try and get the best out of it.
Any of your kids interested in becoming a racing driver?
I got three kids, and maybe the smallest one, but he's still quite young, and let's see.
Now, your fellow German, Nico Rosberg, retired, you know, a few days after winning the championship. Did that surprise you?
Yeah, it surprised me a lot. I don't and didn't follow F1 very closely anymore, but of course I follow it, and that was a huge surprise, but in hindsight, it is understandable, and I think it's a very brave decision and shows that he's got a very strong character.
Great. Okay, I really appreciate your time. Will you please give a message to our listeners? We have listeners all over the world.
Hi, I'm Nick Heidfeld, and I hope you enjoyed my interview with F1 Weekly. Have a good time.
Thank you, Sean.
Nick, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And real quickly, Nass, I got to get to 50 words from the F1 Weekly Forum Familia.
Okay, sir.
Okay, Cosmos says, inability to pass coupled with everyone having one pit stop strategy produced one of the dullest F1 races in recent memory. Fact that there hasn't been one reply to this thread 10 hours after the race speaks volumes. Ye says, indeed, I lost an hour's sleep because our clocks went forward and I wasted 2 hours watching this at 5 a.m. The only ray of light might be that Mercedes have lost some edge. Tricky Dick says, well, this race was very boring. I don't think anything decent happened. Leon Bray, took a Mercedes strategy stuff up to enable Ferrari to win. Wider tires and revised aero, and the racing result is still the same. Can't overtake. Hopefully the slower circuits will help. Chemic says, a flyer in the opening laps of Zarco in his debut, followed by awesome battles with Rossi, Dovi, and Vinales. Fantastic race. Oh, F1 was on this weekend? And finally, Kaysen, what with it being the first day of summertime and a race on 6 a.m. local time and 5 a.m. in real money, I had a dilemma about watching it live. Glad I didn't. Now, Vettel overtook Mr. Hamilton following the latter's pit stop and won the end. Well, there you go, Nasser. It looks like a lot of people are not happy with this Grand Prix. At least it's not as happy as we are in the F1 Weekly Palatial Studios.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And as you know, we all love music here, so we're going to start with Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Impressive win for young American talent from Jupiter FLA, Kyle Kirkwood, in the IndyCar race. And Mr. Roger, just a personal observation. Since my arrival here on a McDonnell Douglas DC-10 in 1985, I rate Kyle Kirkwood as among the top three talents made in USA since then. He is from the right coast, the other two are from the left coast, and they show it in their attitude, especially the one from SoCal. From Northern California, we have A.J. Allmendinger, and he told us when we interviewed him that you and him went to the same school.
Well, him and my son went to the same school. I'm an older person, Nasser.
Oh, I forgot that. Excusez-moi. Okay, your son.
I know, it's my voice and my moisturizer.
Okay, so there is some Rogers connection there. Thanks for the correction.
Bravo.
And from the Southland, we have Stefan Peter Hensel's BFF, the one and only Robbie Gordon. And this IndyCar race, you know, it goes over this Korean War Veterans Memorial Bridge, and they come back on that. Did you see the race or some of it by any chance?
You know, I did watch some of the race, and the restarts were pretty hilarious, but I was wondering if we have been to Nashville, IndyCar as that is, have we raced there in 2023?
No, I don't think so. They do double headers in some cities, Indy being one of them, but not here.
Okay. I don't know why. Going over that bridge, I thought I'd seen it somewhere earlier this year. So, obviously, I have some serious issues.
Yes. And next year, this race will be the season finale. And so it will be no longer Laguna Seca. I was listening to some industry insiders. I mean, I was talking to one of them. And he says to me, Laguna Seca crowd is dead. And it was also reported in one of the magazines, which I was very surprised because I remember going there in the mid-80s, like early 90s. It was jam-packed, and especially when Arnaiz came and raced. So it's very sad to not have too many people there.
Well, the biggest problem on the West Coast is we're more savoir-faire. You know, we're more suave, and we're more Formula One kind of people.
But there is a crowd there that can go there, and I don't know if it's marketing or it's a distance from San Jose and San Francisco. But, I mean, what a beautiful track and what a fantastic part of the country, Pebble Beach, Monterey, hello.
It's the best.
Yeah. Okay, sir, from Nashville, Tennessee, we go to Silverstone, MotoGP action. Three different bikes in the top three, none Japanese, so the change has come. A is for Aprilia, and they were the winners with Spanish riders Aleixo Espargaró. Paco Bagnaia was second for Ducati, and Brad Binder was third for KTM, which is an Austrian brand and, not surprisingly, sponsored by Red Bull. IMSA WeatherTech Series, Matt Campbell and Felipe Nasr giving the victory in a Porsche to Mr. Penske and his team. Second was Tom Blomqvist and Colin Brown with Maya Shank Racing Acura, and another Acura known as the Konica Minolta Acura. It was third with Ricky Taylor and Felipe Albuquerque. And Mr. Rogers, you know, I recently went to Watkins Glen and I was just blown away by how beautiful this track is and how beautiful this area is. So I have new motivation. I'm trying to figure out if I can go between now and the end of the year to Wisconsin Road America, because this is a really, really good track.
obviously, I don't want to go there in November, December, but I will see if I can get there and walk around the track. It will be beautiful. Have you ever been to Wisconsin, sir?
No, sir, but I heard the cheese is pretty good.
Yes, and they are pretty serious about their Monday night football.
Yes, sir, but now that my cousin Rogers went to the New York Jets, everything has changed.
Oh. Is Danica jetting over there soon?
No, he has a new girlfriend. But what the irony is, Aaron Rodgers looks very similar to Fernando Alonso, and I don't know why.
That's the reason. Okay, now you are all set to go to the Monterey Rolex reunion at Laguna Seca, right?
Correct. Yes, sir, I will be going there on the pre-reunion the week earlier to get oriented and to introduce myself to the little people. And of course, then I'll be back on Saturday the 19th, I believe, to meet more of the little people.
Like myself. By the way, did you get the envelope from them with my name on it?
Not yet, sir. Nothing.
Not yet. Keep me posted, please.
Absolutely. We'll make phone calls if we have to at the end of the week.
So do you know already if you will be there both Friday and Saturday? Because I think there's no action on Sunday. Is that correct?
Correct. Now they're trying to work with Pebble Beach to get more people to maybe experience Pebble Beach. So Sunday's dead, and then they do I almost wanted to say the Pikes Peak Hill Climb, but it's not that. It's the Corkscrew Hill Climb on Mondays at Laguna Seca, which is a nice quiet day while people are traveling back to their homes. But the whole weekend is going to be fantastic, folks. Everybody, come on down. Email me. I'll meet up with you. We'll share a hot dog, and it'll be on me. Gracias.
So you're there both Friday and Saturday?
No, I can't do 2 days in a row, simply because the body has to have recuperation period.
Okay, so what day? Do you know what day you'll be there?
I'll be there on Saturday the 19th, and I'll be there a week earlier for the pre-reunion. But there are other things to do. I mean, we've got Bonhams. We have R.M. Sotheby's. We have Meakin. I mean, there's so many auction houses, and there's so many used Ferraris to be had. So there's a lot of stuff to look at. The vintages are everywhere. And you could catch me at Bonhams. I'll be right there next door to the Quail, probably on Thursday the 17th. I'll also be at Sotheby's with the official F1 Weekly photographer, Dan Gentile, Esquire. Yes, it's going to be a busy week, Nass. You know that.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'm looking forward to meeting Mr. Rogers again, and we go from there. Okay, Mr. Rogers, moving on, we have, summer break is here. So today we will look at seasons in the sun, a look at where we are in major championships. Okay? So we will start with Formula One. Lance Stroll will be the Terry Jacks of the week, singing, "Papa, please pray for me. I was the fat sheep of the family till you brought in Alonso." And Jos the Boss is the Del Shannon of the week, singing "My Little Runaway." The Dutch max speed train is stopping only at the winning platform these days, setting new standards and records. He is leading the championship with 314 points, that is 125 points more than second place and teammate Sergio Perez on 189 points. Red Bull leads the Constructors' Championship with 503 points. Their utter domination has put the competition in the caboose. They are at a different gauge and station as number two team, Mercedes, is on 247 points. Gap of 256 points, which brings us to question of the day, sponsored by FBI's lie detector test. Did somebody say, "My team don't make mistakes"? Do you remember that?
Woo! Doggy of the doggies! Well, this is what happens when you say things like that. But it is pretty funny. We all reflect. We all say dumb things occasionally in our lives. But yes.
You know, I am very surprised. I may have missed it, but because I try to watch all the drivers' press conference, which they do, I think, on Thursday with Tom Clarkson, and other people are also there that ask questions. I am surprised, at least I'm not aware of that, some journalist asking Lewis about this statement, because, you know, that's what journalists like to do, you know, poke somebody and see what the reaction is. But, you know, I'll tell you something. If you do this one time too many, then you get the treatment that Ted Kravitz was getting from Red Bull, if you know what I mean.
Exactly. Yeah, you start asking questions like that, guess what? All of a sudden, you're not invited anymore, and they've locked you out of the food area. So, yeah, you got to be nice. You got to play nice. It's politics. Because, really, the Formula One community, the media, it all travels together and moves around. So, yes, you have to be nice to each other. You have to be civilized. But occasionally, maybe we'll get Nasser Hamid in there asking the tough questions.
Oh, please. You know what they say, loose lips sink ships. Okay, sir, now we come to IndyCar racing. Back in the day, we had Washington crossing the Delaware. Next season, we may have Palu crossing the pond. Leading the IndyCar championship with Ganassi, but heading to McLaren IndyCar team to be in the brown bags. Alex Palu is rumored to be a driver wanted by two Formula One teams. And that's a good dream by his management team. One obvious choice is McLaren. Zak Brown is not going to zap Lando or Oscar to give Senor Palu an opportunity to prove himself, which, frankly, the driver already had, as he has raced in European theater before, because he is from there, Viva España. With four rounds remaining in the IndyCar season, Palu is leading the championship with 513 points. Man from Tennessee, Joseph Newgarden, is second with 429 points. And you know, all these youngins who are dying to get to Formula One, Palu, Colton Herta, they should look at Lewis and Alonso as a guiding light. If you don't have the best package, you're not going to win. And to go there, what's his name, Logan Sargeant, to be in a back of the bus operation like Guan Yu Zhou, it's very tough to... Now, if these drivers were already half a second faster than drivers in Junior Formula Europe, in European racing, they would already be in Formula One. But they've had their chances, and not saying they are slow drivers or bad drivers, but unfortunately, the window of opportunity to get into Formula One is very small. And if you don't grab the bull by the horn, it doesn't have to be red, then it's going to be very, very difficult. But let's see how things pan out. I frankly think that he should not even leave Ganassi. You know, he's winning his second championship with this team in a few years, and he came very close to winning the Indy 500, was finished a couple of years ago. So Chip Ganassi likes a winner, and I think he is well advised to stay there. But that's just my opinion. Okay, now, okay, so I mentioned that he's leading by this points, and Newgarden is second. Now we come to what used to be known as Hapidos. Today they are called Formula 2. Championship leader is your French homeboy, Sauber driver Theo Pourchaire, with 168 points. This is his second year in the series. Something's fishy and Vesti in Denmark. Longtime championship leader Frederik Vesti is a Mercedes junior and now second in the points on 156. He is aiming to be the first Danish driver to win F1's feeder series since the days of Formula 3000. Now, Kevin Magnussen, K-Mag, did win World Series by Renault. That was a serious series, but that was a wee bit below GP2. Now we come to Formula 3. Championship leader is Brazilian Gabriel Bortoleto with 144 points. Second is Paul Aron from Estonia on 106 points, only one round remain at Monza. Things are looking very good for Bortoleto, unless he does the McLaren 2007 Interlagos Samba. So we'll see how that goes. I think he'll take the championship. Next, MotoGP, Francesco Pecco Bagnaia leads the championship for Ducati with 214 points.
Second is Spanish rider Jorge Martin, 173 points. Third is Valentino Rossi's team rider Marco Bezzecchi and his fellow Paisan on 167 points. WRC Kalle Rovanperä from Finlandia is the championship leader with 170 points. Elvin Evans from UK is second with 145, and both of these youths are Toyota drivers. Speaking of Toyota, Toyota trio of Sebastian Buemi, Brandon Hartley, and Ryo Hirakawa leads the WEC championship with 107 points at this stage. Second for Ferrari are Alessandro Pierguidi, James Calado, and Antonio Giovinazzi, the Italian Jesus. This combination won the all-important 100 Years of Le Mans event this year. So, and that was Ferrari's first year back in Le Mans, so that's very, very good. And the American version of WEC, which is IMSA WeatherTech Series, championship leaders are Felipe Albuquerque and Ricky Taylor with 2,171 points. Pipo Derani and Alexander Sims are second on 2,157 points. And now, all rise as we come to your favorite series, Le NASCAR. Top two in the standings are from Joe Gibbs' Toyota team. Martin Truex lead with 744 points. Second is Denny Hamlin with 705 points. And Mr. Rogers, now we come to, this is interesting, Going, soon to be gone. Michael Schumacher's F2001B will be up for sale in August. His 2001B car is coming up at a R.M. Sotheby's auction from August 16 to 19. In this car, Michael won the 2002 Australian Grand Prix. And 2 weeks later, he also clinched Ferrari's 150th pole position with this car at the Malaysian Grand Prix, which was won by his brother Ralph, and Michael finished third in this race. So as per the ad from the ad man, this Ferrari has a 100% podium record. Asking price? Only 6 million British pounds, possibly plus VAT, value added tax. Any interest in this vehicle, Mr. Rogers?
Not only will I be interested in this vehicle, but I will be at R.M. Sotheby's. They have granted me press credentials for myself and the official photographer of F1Weekly.com, Monsieur Dan Gentile Esquire. So we're all pumped up. We're going to go see some great Ferraris at R.M. Sotheby's. Thursday, we'll be there probably around noon. If anybody wants to come by and say hello, please. And we'll take pictures next to the F 2001B, because that car, well, the 2002 Ferrari was not that great, so they just went back to the F2001 because it was very, very good. So in those days, you could do that. You don't see that happening too much anymore, Nasser, but yes, it'll be interesting to see that car and the other used Ferraris available coming up in a couple of weeks.
And as you mentioned, if any of the F1 Weekly familiar members are there and would like to stop by and say hello, that'll be nice. Not required, but will be nice.
Yes, absolutely. Just email us. We'll share phone information. And yes, we are real people, Nasser.
Yes, and I'll be there on both Friday and Saturday. At least that's the plan right now. Well, let's see how it works out. Okay, sir, finally we come to Musical Mondial. Formula One is on summer break. One guy is having all the fun and sun. The other 19 are suffering. So it's time to invite Bananarama to the Palatial Studios. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy. Bye-bye.
Good night.